What's up, guys?
Hey, Love Tribe. Welcome to I Do Podcast, where we interview the world's leading relationship, marriage, dating, and self-help experts. Whether you're single, dating, married, or struggling in a relationship, we're here to help give you the tools to succeed.
And today, there are a lot of great tools from Dr. Deborah Campbell. And Dr. Campbell joins us all the way from Australia, but that's easy to do through Skype. And she offers a lot of great information on mindfulness and emotional intelligence in a relationship. And Dr. Campbell is a trained psychologist, but in her previous career, she was a meditation and yoga instructor. So she's kind of uniquely qualified to bring these two worlds of couples therapy and psychology in with mindfulness and meditation practices. And she has a lot of great information, practical tools and tips to bring mindfulness and emotional intelligence into your relationship. So definitely listen out for her recommendations of the specific tools and practices that you can use.
You guys might notice, but I was not in most of the interview. I was taking care of Stella, our daughter. But with the holidays coming up and all the stress that a lot of us can experience from traveling or going to visit family or just having to deal with the crowds at the shopping mall, it is good to meditate and just remember to kind of step back and breathe and hopefully use some of the tools that Dr. Deborah has given us. And stay tuned for at the end of the episode, we're playing another hip abduction song. This song is called Bamako Lullaby from their album
One Less Sound, and it is a lullaby. Get you in that mood, be meditative, mindful, and relax, and just breathe and get that stress out from all that holiday shopping or dealing with family this time of year. We really appreciate all of your support, you guys listening to the show. Tell your friends about it. Leave us a review. Subscribe on iTunes. Send us an email. Let us know what you're liking, what you're disliking, what you'd like to hear more of, different topics. We really love to hear from our listeners, the Love Tribe. And we appreciate your support. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the Amazon link in our show description. We get a small percentage of everything you buy from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything, doesn't raise the price or anything, and just a nice way that can help support the show, help us cover the costs of recording and maybe potentially one day a babysitter for Stella so Sarah can not miss so many interviews. You can also support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/IDOPodcast. You can donate as little as $2 a month, and every little bit helps, so check out our Patreon page. And lastly, audibletrial.com/IDOPodcast. You can go on there. You'll get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So you can download Harry Potter or you can download a relationship book. One of our most popular recommendations is The 5 Love Languages by Gary Chapman. I've actually read the book, did not listen, but I love listening to audio. And you can do it while you work out, while you're driving to work, and get that relationship advice, of course, after you listen to I Do Podcast. And check that out and enjoy it. And we appreciate you all listening.
Enjoy the episode, guys. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, Dr. Campbell, we've given our listeners a little information about what it is that you do. So why don't you take a minute, tell us about yourself and why you enjoy helping people improve their relationships.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a couple therapist. I'm a psychologist by training. And I did my PhD studies in Melbourne on couple relationship satisfaction and the factors that go into creating a really satisfying, which is a little bit of a lukewarm word really, isn't it? But a very happy, connected, joyful kind of marriage that seems to last the distance. And we looked right back at developmental factors for people. So what their own childhood attachment to significant carers was like, you know, whether they had close relationship with parents or whether they had struggles in their childhood and how that affected things, right through to all sorts of other personality factors that had developed more along throughout their life. And we tried to look at what was the influence of these things on their relationship. And then I also trained to be a therapist as well. And I did my training at Relationships Australia, which used to be called our Marriage Guidance Council. So it's one of the premium bodies for looking after people who are struggling in relationships in Australia. So I did those two streams, the research and then took that into the practical therapy with couples, and worked there and in private practice for a number of years. And more recently, I've started writing as well. I've become an author writing about relationships and very much our personal development and our emotional intelligence and how that contributes to the kind of relationships we can have.
Awesome. Well, we want to zero in today and kind of talk a little bit more about those last things, emotional intelligence. And then part of that, they're kind of connected, is mindfulness. And so it seems like mindfulness is kind of like trending these days, you know, with meditation is kind of having a resurgence. I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of successful people talk about meditation and mindfulness, and we hear it in the relationship work of how that can help a relationship. So why don't we start by having you define mindfulness for us and then how we can bring that into a relationship?
Sure. You're absolutely right that mindfulness has really come into a very popular sort of acceptance and understanding, I think, more than ever before. I mean, it's ancient. It comes out of yoga, out of yogic philosophy, but it's practiced completely without religion and even without the physical side of yoga. It's a way of life, really. Mindfulness often is taught by the practice of meditation or finding some sense of stillness and presence in the moment of now, where you are aware of what's going on in your inner world, your thoughts and your feelings, but you're endeavoring to just sit with that and not go off on a tangent and analyze those things or get involved in thinking your way down any of the paths they sort of invite you to. You're just sitting with it and being with it all as it is, and trying to just have allowing an expansive sort of state of mind around that. It all just is happening, and you're able to move into that observer of your inner life sort of role rather than active participant as we are most of the time. So it's a different state of mind, but it's a natural state of mind. It's inside all of us, and we can all click into experiencing mindfulness and usually starting in meditation, as I say, but then taking that out into every aspect of life so that you're able to have that sense of expansiveness and sense of yourself as being able to take a moment, have a breath, even under pressure, because you have a different perspective, a broader perspective on life, perhaps.
Yeah, it's such a valuable tool, but it's easier said than done, right? It's like you said, we all have it inside of us, but it's I don't think, especially nowadays in modern society and we're so busy, it's hard to access. And what's a easy tool that our listeners can use to try to be more mindful?
Yeah, the focusing on your breathing is always the way to start. And also to not make too much of a big deal of meditation or mindfulness and think, am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it right? You know, it's really hard, or I have to devote a certain amount of time every day. All those things can just put pressure. I think really the way to start is to just spend, you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes here and there, wherever you can, whatever you're doing, pull back for a moment, close your eyes if you're comfortable to do that, and just watch your breathing for, you know, the shortest time is okay, just to give yourself that sense of I can be a very involved participant in everything that's going on in my head and my heart, or I can take just this tiny little breath and step back and observe for a moment and realize that I'm involved with this, but I'm also more than this. There's a part of me that can see myself thinking, that can see my feelings, and that can just take that tiny bit of space to get a new perspective when I need to or when it's healthy to do so.
So much of it is the breath work. And there's an app that I found, it's a meditation app, and there's a few, but Headspace, I'm not sure if you've heard of it. Our listeners probably have. They're, I think, one of the major ones, but I would encourage our listeners, you can download it. It's free, and then they have like 10 free sessions, and then it's a short, if you want to continue, there's a short subscription. But even those 10 free sessions, and it just gets you in tune with your breathing, with your body, with your awareness, and our physical is connected to our emotional, and I think that's where the breath comes in. And it, relating that to relationships, I find it's been so valuable just personally, and then hearing other people's stories and talking to other experts, that especially in conflict, because when we're arguing or we're in conflict or we're heading that way, our emotions kind of take over and we are being what I would say is the opposite of mindful. You know, you're mindless and you're letting your emotions control your reaction and what you're saying and what you're doing physically. And just even just taking a short breath before you go down that path will sometimes be enough to snap you out of it and be like, okay, this is unreasonable, what I'm doing, what I'm saying, and it's just such a valuable tool.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Mindfulness is a life skill. It doesn't mean you have to become a meditator. You know, if you're not into meditation, that's fine. But mindfulness, the ability to give yourself the space and have the emotional intelligence activated in yourself, because we all have it, to have that activated in yourself that you can respond rather than lash out and react in a fight or flight kind of way in your relationships, in your meaningful relationships. You know, that is really a relationship-saving skill, an ability to just be able to check before you jump if your raw spots are being touched, or you're feeling really angry, or you're feeling hurt, just to be able to check, is what I'm about to do or say now going to make this better or going to make this worse? If you can just give yourself a split second to check that before you jump, then you can save a lot of trouble and a lot of hurt. Because if nasty words come out, especially in couple relationships and in families, people remember them. You know, words spoken in anger are quite memorable. And if you cannot do them in the first place, not say them, and just think about, you know, am I actually being helpful to myself and my partner? You save yourself a lot of trouble, a lot of hurt, and keep things on a much better path in the relationship. Because there's no such thing for me as a therapist, and what I've seen, there's no such thing as good criticism in a couple. There's no such thing as, you know, good fights, so far as I'm concerned. You know, you can disagree, but that word fight to me is never really going to go to a good place, you know?
Yeah, and like you said, you never forget those angry comments, and that'll just build up, you know, and it's like all these little fights, you might not think it's a big deal, but if you're having them, and it's just like this emotional bank account, and if you're going into the negative, and there's not positive going in there, it's just going to wear you down. It's going to wear your relationship down.
Yes, people remember, they come into therapy when things, because usually people come into therapy, at least in Australia, when things are quite far down the track in terms of going wrong, you know. Unfortunately, not many people come early when there's the first signs of unhappiness or misunderstandings have been occurring. They usually wait for quite a long time, which makes their job and my job a little bit harder. But yeah, often they'll come along and they remember, like you say, they remember the nasty things that were said, even if it was quite a long time ago. And they do store them up and they think, you know, he or she said this, and it's really cut quite deeply. And you can't take those words back. So having some mindfulness, being able to give things some space, is a great preventative.
Yeah, and it's so funny how we, as humans, we don't like to get ahead of the problem a lot of times. We're waiting until something has gone wrong, and then we say, okay, now let's try to fix it. And either it's too late sometimes, or you're just giving yourself so much more work, whereas instead, if you can get ahead of the problem, you're going to be that much better. And that's what we really try to do on the podcast. Like, even personally, why we started it, we were in a good place in our relationship, Sarah and I, but we said, you know, why not try to make it better? Why not try to get the tools so that when we do run into conflict, which we do, and everyone will inevitably, we have the tools to sort of work with it. And even, you know, we're 65 shows in and having interviewed 65 experts like yourself, we're still continually struggling to do better, to improve our relationship. And it, like I said, it's in a good place, but I don't think there's anything that exists that's just perfect. It doesn't require work.
Yeah, it's a great philosophy you have to be preventative and to, you know, the great thing you said then was that you know that challenges will come, you know, that nothing is ever perfect. And if it is, that perfection doesn't stay that way. You know, everything is dynamic. Relationships are dynamic. Our life is constantly changing and throwing up new challenges, even when they're great, like having a baby or something else happen in your life, a new job. These things can be great, but they will challenge the relationship in different ways, and they will apply different pressures as well as give great new gifts, and things will change. And change can always cause some anxiety. And we have to just acknowledge that challenges will occur, and it's great to ask ourselves, you know, what am I going to do to be ready, and what am I going to do in the event of us disagreeing over something? You know, how are we going to, what tools do we have to talk our way through things, to find resolutions? You know, how do we deal when we don't agree? It's really great to have those ideas talked about and thought about, rather than just hitting the challenge head on and having no preparation, which is unfortunately what a lot of couples do, because they believe in the dream of, okay, we're in love and it'll just be like this. And whatever happens, we'll sort it out. We don't need to think about it or plan. But, you know, it's a lot better if you do. Yeah. Being prepared is a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because we're always trying to get a gauge of who our listeners are. And what I imagine is a lot of times it's people, they're looking for podcasts because maybe they're struggling in a relationship. And we are one of the first podcasts that come up if you are Google, or if you're searching for relationship advice, marriage advice, things like that. And that's great. And we do want to help those people and our listeners that are coming to us from all different relationship backgrounds, single, married, divorced, looking for someone, dating. But if, you know, I'm kind of speaking directly to them now, is that if you are listening to this, you're struggling, one day you're not going to be struggling, and that's great. Hopefully that's the situation you find yourself in. But don't be like, okay, it's fixed, and stop there. You know, it's like, continue to listen to this podcast, to read and to try to improve your relationship, because like you said, life is not static, it's dynamic. And however you're feeling, maybe at that moment of pure bliss, I'm not trying to be negative and say, oh, that's going to disappear, but that's just what life is. It goes up, it goes down. And so you want to try to get ahead of it and have as many tools possible to deal with whatever arises.
Yeah, I think we all to some extent are victims of the fantasy, you know, that love is just happens, that you literally fall in love and it's all quite mindless. It happens. if it's right, then it's just feeling wonderful and it's brilliant, and then you don't have to do anything after that. You know, I think until we know better, that's the line that we're kind of sold by popular culture to some extent, or maybe by the fairy stories around us as we're growing up of what love is. And it can be a real shock to realize that it's not like that, and that we're real people. We're not fairy story characters. And when it comes to love, just like everything else, and that it takes, I don't necessarily like to say work, but it takes awareness, it takes focus, presence, mindfulness to have a good relationship. You know, I don't think those things have to be work at all. They're enjoyable, they're beautiful, but it's not, like you said before, a thoughtless process to be in relationship. It's a very thoughtful process.
Yeah, and it's going to make all aspects of your life better. You know, this mindfulness, emotional intelligence, it's going to make your relationship better, and therefore, or if you're not in a relationship, it's just going to make you have more gratitude and be more aware of the things in your life, and it's all good stuff. And it's funny how, like you said, it's not a fairy tale. It's like Sleeping Beauty gets kissed by the prince, wakes up, and they live happily ever after, but they don't tell you about the arguments they have in the castle and everything along the way. Maybe that needs to be, having a 1.5-year-old girl, maybe that needs to be Disney's next movie, you know, show some conflict and conflict resolution and mindfulness. And I think that would be a good thing.
It sure would. It sure would. Stories are so influential. And the stories we tell ourselves about who we are and what we deserve, where we come from, these are usually unconscious stories. And until we become more mindful of what goes on in our mind and in our heart every day, and when challenges come up, until we become more mindful of our responses, we might not even realize the stories we tell ourselves that are defining us without us even realizing. You know, for example, if we suffered, a parent wasn't there when we were a child, we suffered a sense of not knowing what it was like to be well-fathered or mothered, have a parent who was very present emotionally, then we may have all sorts of assumptions that built up around that affect how we are in our couple relationship and with our own kids, and not realize until we tune in and sort of listen and reflect on the way we are in relationship, and realize that we can actually reinterpret things that have happened and use them for our advantage instead of feeling like a victim to them or not even realizing their impacts. We can reinterpret difficult things that happen and see them as strengths we can then build upon, and knowledge that we have because of what happened to us and that we wouldn't otherwise have, that can empower. So, mindfulness helps us to understand who we are and where we come from and what our stories are and what the fairy stories might be that are influencing us, and be able to make conscious decisions about all of that stuff we bring to relationships as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because not only can it help like in the present in a relationship during a present moment of giving you pause, but it can help you self-reflect on the things that have shaped you into the reactions that you have today.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, for example, I know myself, I didn't have my dad around when I was very little, and it really sensitized me all my life to feeling left behind, or feeling worried about rejection, or worried about being left, being abandoned. Abandoned's a stronger word, I suppose, but along those lines. And, even to this day, when I'm in a very happy marriage, but my husband has to travel sometimes, I can still feel those pangs, those pangs of, oh, he's going, and that it has perhaps more of an intense feeling in me than it otherwise might for other people who don't have the same background, and a bit more anxiety around it. And I can work with that, and I have tools to be okay with that to know that that's what's going on for me. But that's just one example of how the ancient past of you almost can still come up in the now, and just knowing about it, you can be really empowered to look after yourself and say, okay, I know what this is, I don't have to spiral into upset around this. I can deal with it. And I know myself enough to look after myself when these things are bothering me.
It's so powerful, these things like that are ingrained in us, that we have reactions and we don't even know why initially, maybe why, like in your example, why you feel upset when your husband's gone, and it goes back to your childhood. We had someone tell a story on the podcast about something when they were 6 years old that was affecting their marriage. They'd been married for 20 years, and this problem was ingrained in something that had didn't really come up for 20 years of marriage, and had occurred when they were 6 years old, and they were like in their 60s. So
yeah,
and they didn't really get, that person didn't really even get to the root of that problem for over 60 years, you know, and then mm-hmm. finally realizing, wow, like that is why it was so important to them.
Yes. And that is normal. I mean, that is what it is to be human. Our development affects who we are. And one of the most intense places for expressing who we are is in our close, intimate relationships, our couple relationships, and our close family relationships. And that's when we show those influences from long ago, because those, when we were little, you know, our attachment style, our way of being with close others is formed according to what we have with our parents and or our caregivers, whoever is closest to us. And it's reflected later in our relationships. And of course we can modify it. Of course we can, through awareness, change things. We're not a victim of the past, but it does have an influence. And knowing about that influence is what gives us the power to work with it and to use it positively.
Having a 1.5-year-old and then having this podcast and talking about this subject has made my wife, Sarah, and I, like, painfully aware of how we're parenting Stella, and making sure, you know, it's like everything's like, oh, this is going to affect her attachment style. And it's just kind of, and it's so true. Real quick, could you kind of maybe give us advice, or our listeners as parents, kind of with a kid, how we can navigate this?
Oh, yes. I think I can keep it really simple and really clear by saying that, to me, one of the definitional factors of love and feeling loved is to be given true presence from the other person. So if you have a sense as a child, even though you wouldn't have the words for it at that age, 1.5, you know, there's no words for it, but you feel what a real presence is from another person. They are not just with you physically, but they're with you emotionally. They're open and connected to you from the heart and giving their full attention in the moment. Not every moment, because no parent can be there every moment, but when you are there and you're able to give your full attention, you're not having to make the dinner or do something else, because we've got to be realistic. In those moments where you can give it fully, you give it fully. And the child feels that. And that is how you feel loved, for me. That in absolute presence and attention, that mindful connection that involves the whole person, heart, mind, physically there, everything present in the moment. And that's love. You get that, you're doing okay.
Yeah, wow. I love that. I love that. It's, I guess you could say it's kind of simple, but it's complex and powerful. And, you know, put the iPhone down, put the TV in the background, and really just focus in on your child. Or even, I think that's valuable advice to put towards your partner.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad that you really get that. Yeah, it's about putting the other things down and having those times when there's no distraction. Because the other person, the other being, be it your child, your partner, they're worth it. They're enough. Just them. Nothing else is needed. And that's that mindful connection that causes a person to understand that they are valuable to you. They're all you need in that moment for your full attention to be present. And, you know, we can't do that all the time. We have other things we have to do, but we can do it sometimes. And in that, I think you build a strong personality and you help somebody to know love so they can also give love.
Oh, I love that. And we talked a little bit about emotional intelligence and how that relates to mindfulness. Can we just, can you define emotional intelligence for us?
Well, it's been defined in so many ways, and it gets really complicated. We have emotional intelligence tests. It's very connected to the concept of mindfulness from where I am. So to keep it really simple, I see one of the major parts of emotional intelligence is what we've been talking about. It's that ability to observe your emotion, and that doesn't mean disconnect and be distant from it. It just means to be able to take a breath and understand what's happening in you, to be able to name emotions that are coming up for you, to be able to speak about feelings and say, this is what I'm feeling now, and to be able to be responsive rather than reactive. So rather than just lashing out if you're angry or running if you're afraid, to be able to take a breath and say, okay, this is what's happening for me. I know this is what it's called, and I'm going to see how I can express this in a way that's going to get me some help with it, or that's going to reach out to the other person rather than shove them away, to have some thoughtfulness, some mindfulness around the expression of emotion, and also be able to recognize it for what it is.
You mentioned it earlier. It's like understanding your emotions, but not letting them run you.
Yes. Yeah. Not letting the horses kind of run the chariot, but is the old yoga way of talking about the senses and the emotions, that we don't let them take over and run us, that we are able to feel them, we're able to give them their credit and give them their head in certain ways, that they can draw us in certain ways, like horses pulling a chariot, but that we are the one in control. We are the chariot driver, so we're able to observe and make decisions.
Now, I mentioned the app, the Headspace app that I use for helping in meditation. Are there any sort of exercises that you can give our listeners to help maybe start in a meditation practice or mindfulness practice?
Sure. As you say, there are many out there. We have one in Australia called Smiling Mind. I'm not affiliated to it, but it's quite a good one. It is free, like the one you've suggested. And it has many, many different meditations on there with lots of different voices, so you can find ones that work for you. Really just drawing back and taking what we might call a breathing space can be wonderful, where you sit back, or you can even do it, you can do it anywhere, doing anything. You can do it standing, sitting, eyes closed or open, where you just take a few minutes to observe your breathing. And that gives you an anchor, that gives you something to focus on, because it's very hard at first to sit and observe your thoughts and feelings going past you when you're not used to doing that. You need something a little bit more definite, a bit more concrete that you can focus on. And breathing can be one of those places, because it's always there. It's always with you. You watch your inhalation and exhalation, and every time you feel your mind going off onto following up a thought or a feeling, a memory or a plan or wherever it's going, you just draw it back and just say to yourself, just watch the breathing, nothing else. And really, the practice of mindfulness is just that, is bringing yourself back to just watching the breathing, even though your mind is going to try to do all these other things that it does in active mode. You're saying to it, no, just come back into observer mode, just for a couple of minutes. And you teach yourself this alternative state of mind that is more spacious than doing. You know, it just gives you a time out. And you find even after 1 or 2 minutes, you'll come back and feel just a little bit fresher and just a little bit more spacious in your mind, like things aren't as crowded and busy.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I would tell our listeners, as I'm by no means even a regular meditator, I try to do this app every morning. That usually ends up being twice a week if I'm lucky, but especially being a type A personality, is that doing this, it's not like a win-lose sort of like, oh, you're a good meditator, you know, like you're doing good. One of the things that helped me is just the act of attempting it and trying it. Don't put the pressure on yourself that you have to achieve some Zen state, or that especially trying to control your thoughts. Like, it's natural if you're going through this breath work that thoughts are going to come up and you're going to think about the chores you have to do or picking up the kids from school, and not to judge that and just to be okay with it kind of really helped me release. And I still had those thoughts, but it was like, all right, I didn't judge my practice as successful or non-successful based on, you know, the quote Zen state that I was able to get in or not get into.
Yeah, it's really important to acknowledge in any discussion of mindfulness that some people just do not want to meditate. They won't meditate because they don't like the idea, or they just don't want to do it. It doesn't appeal to them, and that's absolutely fine. I mean, you do not have to meditate every day to live mindfully. Meditation is a great way to learn mindfulness, but you don't have to meditate every day for a certain amount of time, or think of yourself as a yogi to, you know, a practitioner of yoga, to be someone who can live mindfully, who can step back and exercise emotional intelligence at important times and disagree respectfully with a partner. You know, you don't have to be a regular meditator to learn to be mindful and to carry that through in your active daily life as an attitude, as a skill that you bring out from what is already within you. Yeah, it's not about changing who you are in any way.
Awesome. Well, this is all great advice. And now we got to move forward into the lasting love round. What is one tool or practice our listeners can use on a daily basis to help improve their relationship?
One tool. Well, learning to disagree respectfully and kindly is absolutely key, because you won't always agree. And the first step to that is to be mindful, to reflect on what's important to you and to listen to what the other person's saying and hear what's important to them. So to give it a moment and not flash back with reaction is vital, to have that mindfulness.
Is there a book or resource you could recommend to listeners who want to improve their relationships?
Well, I have recently written a book that is coming out in March next year, called Lovelands, and that's personal reflection as well as a lot of great relationship advice. What do I recommend in the now? I have some resources that are available through my website, and then there are so many great mindfulness resources, as we've suggested, to learn mindfulness techniques to use as an underlying resource in all relationships.
Awesome. Well, we'll have your book, Lovelands. It comes out in March 2017. We'll have that on your show notes page on idopodcast.com, and they'll be able to find those resources there.
Thank you so much. It's been really lovely to talk to you this morning.
No, we appreciate having you on the show. And why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, and then we'll say goodbye.
It's pretty easy. It's drdeborahcampbell.com.
Easy. Perfect. Well, as I already mentioned, our listeners can find your website on idopodcast.com under your show notes page. And we really appreciate you taking the time. It's morning time down in Australia to come on the show. And thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Hi, Sarah here. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so through Patreon, Amazon, or Audible.com. All the links are on the bottom of our show notes page on idopodcast.com and in the description for this episode. Also, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe on iTunes. We appreciate it so much. Thanks.